Mr. Smith Talks Triathlon, Episode 59, the 60K Ultramarathon Race Report. Mr. Smith Talks Triathlon, practical triathlon advice for everyday athletes. And it's not every day an athlete runs slash walks 60K.
No, and I'm pretty bloody happy I'm not doing it today again, I've got to say.
Yeah, I think probably a combination of how your body feels and the fact that there's a little bit of sunshine now. I think the weather gods played into your hands on Saturday.
Yeah, it was a good day. And I guess this episode is a good chance to just reflect on a few things that happened to me over the weekend with what I was doing. But I kind of want to start with the qualifier that I don't like talking about myself that much, and I certainly know for everyone that I'm coaching and everything I do, it's not about me. But I just thought this was a great chance to talk about an event at a time where no one is doing events, but just to give a few tips and thoughts for as we go through the season, what we're going to be back to at some point.
Yeah, and I think no matter what it is, whether it's 5K TT or a 2-hour ride on the bike or whatever, you've got to put some certain things in place before you do it. What you decided to do was a little bit at the other end of the scale. So run us through it, mate. Or run slash walk slash crawl us through the rationale.
It certainly was. Yeah, so this wasn't, ironically, we were out of lockdown when everyone was doing crazy challenges like marathons around the block and ultras around the block. And I was, no, not going to do one of those. And then at quite late notice, I discovered that Relay for Life was going, and it was meant to be on this particular weekend. Relay for Life is a fundraiser for the Cancer Society of New Zealand. And having had my experience with cancer last year, I thought, well, look, it's time I did something to give back. So that was my motivation for doing it. And it did come up at short notice. It was probably only a few, 3 weeks beforehand maybe that I discovered this and so decided. So it was certainly something that I was not trained for and was not planning to do it this time of year. But I thought, look, I'm confident I can run, walk my way through 50K within the 8-hour window that they asked us to do it. And I thought, well, look, there's a chance I'll get to 60.
8 hours.
We'll see what happens.
I think I lost you there briefly, Gerard, but that's technology for us. We are, we're using it to the best of our ability.
It just told me that I am unstable.
It probably should have told you that last week. So one of those questions that you always throw out there before an event, you ask us if we've got a race plan. So did you have a race plan?
The answer that I get from a lot of people is, yes, I do. And when I probe more, it's not written down. It's just a bunch of ideas floating around the head. And so that's the level of race plan I went to this time. I knew I had a plan for how I was going to approach it in terms of pacing it, had some thoughts around nutrition. I knew what time I would have to get up in the morning, what I was going to have for breakfast, all of those basics. But it wasn't a full-on race plan. I'm someone who likes a good list and checklist of things to do, but just because it makes me feel organized and don't have to think, but didn't feel like I needed it for this one.
Yeah, you didn't really need to recce the course too much. For those don't know, it was about 1.6 kilometers around your block.
Around the block, yep. Knew it quite well.
Yeah. But you did spice it up by occasionally changing direction.
Yep, and as Dave Creamer pointed out, there was it's not a flat course, is it? I wouldn't have called it hilly, like running around the lakefront at Taupo. It's not hilly, but it's not flat either. It gets harder as you go on.
Well, there's some nice little inclines, and Colway Street just goes up and up and up if you're running up it.
Yeah.
And when you've got to do that sort of 28, 29, 30 times, it's going to start. It'll get you eventually.
Yeah, and it did. I can confirm that.
Yeah. So no race plan. You've confirmed that. Excellent. To all those people listening, if he ever asks you again and you say no, don't feel guilty that you haven't got a race plan. What about a taper? Was that just a ridiculous question as well?
No, it's not actually, because the weekend before I had done my longest run in a fair while, which was 2 hours in the hills, at the end of which I went, oh, I've got to go for 8 hours next weekend, but put that aside. And I was feeling just a little niggle in one of the knees after that long run. So last week I did no running at all, and I did a kind of harder squad. Not even a harder bike ride. So it was just a very, very easy week leading into it, which definitely I needed to make sure that there were the knee didn't play up too much on the day. But one of the things that I got reminded of then is that in recovery weeks, taper weeks, things like that, when the training goes down, is that I'm a bit of a disaster. That, you miss the endorphins of training and putting in some hard work. And I just felt flat and off, and probably ate a few too many ice creams that week than I would normally have do before going into an event. So, it was a good reminder for me that those weeks I actually do find really, really difficult from a mental point of view, how the body's feeling. Anything about this event, but it's just what my body goes through.
Yeah, and that sort of goes a little bit back to the last podcast where we talked about recovery. And you know, I'm a bit similar. I'm not very good at doing nothing. And in your case, you completely backed off. There wasn't even any sort of easy runs just to keep the body ticking over. You remove those from the calendar. So yeah, and it goes one way or the other. You kind of, the spring starts to coil. But a lot of us, you actually do. You feel like just a bit lethargic and a bit like,
Yeah.
I haven't got the same sort of chemicals flying around my body that exercise gives me. So yeah, you do. You hit a bit of a flat zone.
And I've known that for a fair while about me, but it's such a good reminder that it's something that I need to work hard on actually myself in recovery weeks and actually finding ways, I say deal with that feeling of being flat and accept that and, work out how to get the most out of it rather than just feeling flat and like I'm not enjoying it and want to be doing something else.
So, safe in the knowledge that you were going to win your age group for this event, were there any nerves?
No nerves. There was the, what am I doing trying to kid myself? I might be able to get through 60K. I was confident for 50, but thought 60. Oh. So a little bit of headspace stuff going on around that, but nothing that derailed me in that way, that's for sure.
Yeah, but a fantastic family around you supporting. I'm sure they sort of helped, and in the absence of the kids having to head off to school, you kind of had them through the day as well, sort of in the week leading up. So, enough of a distraction to maybe at least keep you ticking over. Otherwise, you might have gone bonkers.
Yeah, look, absolutely, yeah, they're definitely a good thing in that for sure.
Yeah. So race morning, no major checklist to go through. Wetsuit, goggles, bike, whatever.
It was so simple.
Because you're just walking out the front door and either turning left or right and starting.
So I had a bag of spare shoes and socks that I packed and chucked in the boot of the car so I could change as needed. A few snacks and it was out the door into the start. And the start was quite different to what I expected. That I knew that there would be some degree of emotion for me in it. A lot of people at the start of a race have nerves or emotions about getting there, and for me this one had a particular meaning. And kind of came out the door, and there was a bunch of people standing there ready to kind of send me off and support me, and I probably didn't appreciate them or recognize that well enough, because I was just in a kind of bit of a confused state there myself. But once we settled into things and kind of got through the day, then it was absolutely fantastic having people stop in and say hi and support and help me through those times, because it would have been a bloody long day on my own, that's for sure.
Yeah. So to the day, the actual doing the laps component, how did it pan out from a, because you talked about kind of running 3, walking 1. Yeah, you had some different ideas about the pacing, and obviously your family and various other waifs and strays joined you for a lap or 3. Some people for 3 hours worth of laps.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave Creamer.
You know, yeah. So, like the pacing bit, how did that go?
So yeah, because it's not a flat course, I wasn't running it to a pace. I was just running easy, running at a really, really comfortable level. Could happily talk away, breathe through the nose if you want. And I had a plan where I was going to run for 3 laps, then walk for 1 lap. And that's the way I was going to start. And I planned to do 2 to 3 hours at that level. And then I was going to adjust it to run for 2, walk for 1. And then as it's getting tireder, run for 1, walk for 1. And so on, just knowing that I had nowhere near the level of training to run through the whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a managed decline, if you like. And so, yeah, I had a plan and I went into it with that. Adjusted it a bit on the fly, as you do, but just, yeah, knowing, yeah, having a plan like that, I still found really, really useful in this situation.
So no negative split. You didn't, the last 30K, last 30K wasn't faster than the first.
I was reduced to a walk for the last 2 hours and I was a bit disappointed about that, but I had an ITB which was niggling and flaring up and giving me some grief, so there's no way I was going to run and do myself some damage, given everything else that we have to do coming up. So yeah, I was a bit disappointed by that, but I could still walk and still kept up the best pace I could through that.
And from a nutrition perspective, I know we joked that you go almost, you know, you went past your front door. Obviously that was your toilet facilities, but you know, for something like this that lasts 8 hours, and I'm going to take a wild guess, the fact you're walking probably means you could sort of take on some slight different foods that,
yeah.
And if you were, you know, charging through an aid station and running. So yeah, what was the, how often and what?
It was low enough intensity that I knew I could eat anything and be absolutely fine. So there was no gels or sports drinks or anything like that. I decided to try a couple of different things just to see how it would go. So one of my first pit stops was for a banana and peanut butter, because I hear about a lot of trail ultra runners who like peanut butter and things with a bit more fat and substance. So I thought I'd give it a go. Personally, for me, I found that it really, really killed my energy levels. I just, after that, I had a really, really flat patch for a fair while. And it wasn't until I came around and felt like eating again and put my order in. My daughter ran upstairs, made something, had it ready for me on the next lap. Had just a bread roll with some chicken and coleslaw in it. And that was just absolutely magic.
I thought she was going to, you know, come out with a margarita pizza and a side of fries or something, but yeah.
Well, wait till I get to the next one. Not quite.
Oh.
But yeah, so for me, it reinforced that I'm a big believer in eating more fat in the diet and the benefits of that. Don't think, for me personally, I know I don't need to go super extreme on that. But when it comes to exercise and fuel, the fat, I've tried it in different ways. That one really just doesn't work for me. Certainly does for some people with the really long stuff. But again, just fantastic to have these opportunities to experiment with different things and find out for yourself.
Yeah. Was there anything you, apart from the peanut butter and banana, were there anything that you tried that you usually like that also disagreed?
No, that was it really. In fact, I say I didn't eat that much, that if I think of us on a long ride, something like that, where I was maybe burning a bit more energy, I would have eaten a lot more. With the walking that went into this, I was surprised at that I didn't eat as much as I thought I would. But by the time I had those bits I mentioned and put my order in, Lucy ran inside and made a bit of sushi for me.
Oh, goodness me.
Sushi with soy sauce. That was nice and salty. That was absolute gold.
Yep.
And then Chantel also turned up with her famous magic slice, which is just chocker full of oats and fruit and sugar and butter and goodness like that. And
superb.
Yeah. So there's lots of good food was eaten, but still not quite as much as I expected.
And what about from a fluids perspective? You said sort of no gels or energy drinks. Was it just water?
Yeah, I was just drinking water. And I think there was definitely salt in the things like the sushi, the soy sauce. Maybe a couple of other things I had, but it wasn't hot. I wasn't working hard at all, so I felt like water was just plenty to keep me going.
Yeah. Now, you talked a bit about, the last 2 hours walking, the IT band playing up. Before that, even, how was the head? You know, because 8 hours is a long time doing anything.
Yeah.
How were you mentally? And if it did get a bit tough, what were the games you played in your mind?
I expected that it would get tough, and I didn't really know in what way. One of the real flat patches I had was, like I mentioned, after the peanut butter. And I was just feeling really, really down and feeling that just not just energy-wise, but mentally as well. And so I knew that those patches would come. And so my strategy going into it was remembering why I was doing this and the fact that I had had cancer. I was really lucky in that they were able to operate, get rid of it, and all I had to do was recover. I didn't have a real battle for my health, for my life, like a lot of people do with cancer. Mm. And so that was my mental strategy. If I was finding it tough, remembering that, and this was my chance to battle, put in the battle that I didn't have to do before, and to be able to fight for some other people. And that, absolutely, when I remembered that, it was just like a light switch. It was back on. It was okay. Didn't necessarily get easier physically, but mentally my headspace came back into the right place. So having prepared and a strategy to use, I think, is so, so valuable.
Yeah, I think perspective and gratitude, all those words that spring to mind. Again, because we choose to participate in this in triathlon and choose to do a 60K ultra marathon. So, you interesting just to hear what you pulled on, and then obviously the family around, and I came up and did a couple of laps with you, but you know, great to see your family cranking out some decent Ks as well.
Yep, the three of them teamed up to beat me all together. They added up their mileage and they got more than me, so they put in a huge effort as well.
Absolutely superb, yeah. And you know, it was only one discipline, but you talked about having some spare shoes and socks, and so some transitions. Did you set any records there?
My transitions were appalling. And okay, it's not peak season, that's okay, but yeah, it was just a reminder to me that the little things like that you might want to be sharp in a race at some stage. That didn't have to be sharp here, but it takes practice of those things. You do lose those skills and process, so definitely something that will encourage practicing more as the season goes on.
Yeah, I can imagine when a transition is outside your house and there's a nice comfy sofa with some beers in the fridge. It's a bit hard to just carry on.
But, look, speaking of beers in the fridge, is that recovery as well, that we've talked a lot about recovery lately, and I definitely used some of those strategies that I went for a swim the next day, got a massage coming up, various things like that to assist the recovery, which are really valuable. Mm. But I also treated it like an event, so there were certainly some beers at the end of it.
Yeah. Any other, you know, before we sort of tie up, Gerard, just a, you know, insights, thoughts? Clearly it was something you wanted to do for you and for other people who've gone through similar battles. 60K, I just can't even fathom it. How did you, I suppose my question is, you know, and you've talked about some of the things, you know, what was the real thing that got you through it?
Having that reason to do it. Mm. And it's certainly a story that you hear from a lot of people doing Ironman, is there's a lot of people who have a big story behind it. In the early years when I used to go and watch or support, or when I wasn't doing it, often walking with people late into the evening and just random strangers and hearing their stories about someone whose brother and father both died of heart disease at an early age. So he didn't want that to happen to him and his family. Mm. Having that why, that incentive, that drive. Now, not everyone has it to that level, but if you're going out there for a big challenging event, is to what degree, what pushes you to challenge yourself and what pushes you for the to be the best you can and to achieve the best that you can on that day. It's so valuable knowing that beforehand so you can call on it when you need to.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before, and everybody has a different one. Mm. You know, some of us have been through experiences that give us a very deep emotive why. Yep. Others, have been lucky enough not to have to go through that. But I think having a why, as you say, is really important.
Yeah.
And we've already alluded to, you talked about the crowd, you know, at Ironman and walking with people.
Oh, yeah.
Must have been pretty lonely. Would have been pretty lonely going around that block on your own. So, you know, having a family and various people popping by. Not everybody came with magic slice like Chantel, but you know, hopefully, yeah, that must have been a huge part.
Oh, it absolutely was, and I'd really underestimated it for this. That I expected a few people to stop by and just kind of in passing, but yeah, I'd really underestimated how valuable it was, and reminded me again those big events when you have your family, your supporters on the sidelines, other teammates out there, how much that lifts you and gets you through. Mm. And easy to forget at this time of year, midwinter, when you're not doing events, but that is really some of the race day magic that does come later.
Yeah, and it's one of those great things about the squad. You know, when we get to that point, let's hope it's sooner rather than later where we are doing events, mm. whether it's actually just supporters on the sideline or whether it's squad members doing the event.
Yeah,
the odd shout out, silly one-liner, you know, encouraging remark, it does mean a lot.
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah.
And I think the final thing really is that how important good foundations are, because I said that I hadn't been training up for this distance, for this event, and that through the time we're in lockdown, I was doing the same as a lot of other people in the squad with just frequent half-hour run most days, two some days. So nothing really big and long. It's only the last couple of weeks they started getting a bit longer. But it's the foundations of that work that I put in, plus the years of training previously, which all really do contribute. And it's those foundations over time which absolutely account for 80% of your performance.
Hmm.
If I had the time and the build up to train longer for this, absolutely I could have done more, I could have done better. But it's quite amazing what you can achieve on just good, strong foundations. So again, a lot of the things we have been talking about lately on the podcast and will be talking about is making sure we get the foundations right at this time of year, not rushing into the big sexy stuff.
You should probably tell all squad members to not worry. There won't be a 60K run in their schedules sometime soon just to test the foundations, I hope.
If you want to promise them that, Doug, that's fine. I'll let you do that.
Yeah, I don't think so. No. Well, on behalf of the squad and everybody, because, you know, once you announced that you were going to give this a crack, very, you know, you're a sort of a low-key kind of guy, but, you know, there was no escaping it. And to do it and achieve it because of your why, just fantastic. And, from the squad and from me personally, we're glad you're around to do it and that you didn't have to battle too hard last year. You probably found this one even harder. So top job, and we look forward to the 100K that you're going to do next year.
Hey, look, I just want to say a big thank you to everyone in the squad who supported by turning up, by sending me good wishes, and those who donated, because this was a fundraiser, and together we raised over $4,000 for the Cancer Society to put towards, to use for people going through cancer, and that just blew me away, that's the financial support side of it as well. So a huge thank you to everyone.
No, superb, Gerard. Love your work. And we're at level two. Who knows? We might be doing this face to face before you know it.
Fantastic. All right. All the best. Thanks, Doug.
Cheers.